It's your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast for download. The RTC for 20 great years has the best OTR on our live streaming. And continue tuning in to the Radio Book Channel, along with the RTC Music Channel. All at oldtimeradiolisten.com.
Welcome to this week's RTC Weekly Download, where we explore the old-time radio programs from the past and bring them back for today for all of you to enjoy once again. They're good, so we'll give them a reprieve and bring them to your computer, I guess, or telephone, or whatever you're listening to, as opposed to the old tube radio. Well, this week it's all about comedy. We have three half-hour programs for you, and it's different kinds of comedy. We're going to start off with a more or less unique show, Behind the Mic, and it's called Comedy Broadcast. This is from 1941.
Radio's own show, Behind the Mic. Radio. With a switch of your dial, radio brings you tragedy, comedy, entertainment, information, education, a whole world at your command. But there are stories behind radio. Yes, stories behind your favorite program and favorite personalities and radio people you never hear of. Stories as amusing, dramatic, and as interesting as any make-believe stories you hear on the air. And that's what we give you, the human interest, the glamour, the tragedy, the comedy, and information that are behind the mic. And now presenting a man whose name has been a symbol of the best in radio since the beginning of broadcasting, Graham McNamee.
Thank you, Gilbert Martin, and good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen of the radio audience. This afternoon, Behind the Mic shows you how a radio comedy broadcast is written. We bring you the sound effect of the week, a dramatization of an amusing little incident involving orchestra leader B.A. Rolfe. How a singing trio is being groomed for radio success by NBC. A salute to one of radio's favorite old programs, Whittall's Anglo-Persians, featuring the music of Louis Katzman. And finally, a dramatic story behind a broadcast by Tom Powers, well-known star of radio and stage. For those of you who wonder how your favorite comedian puts together a program, we're going to show you how this is sometimes done. And if you think it's easy, Gandhi is India's best-dressed man. And now, writing on a comedy program very often starts 2 weeks before the broadcast, as most comedians like to keep at least a week ahead of their scripts. Nowadays, a comedian may have, say, two main writers or more, and a number of subordinate writers. Let's say we attend the meeting of a comedian whom we'll call Eddie McGee and his two main writers, Jack Pun and Joe Gag, at Eddie's home, where they're getting their first program ideas.
All right, fellas. Now, what'll we do for our opening routine?
Well, how about some jokes about you going to the racetrack and losing your shirt?
No, I think that's been overdone. Comedians have lost their shirts so much, laundrymen are picketing the bookies.
I think he's right, Jack.
But look, I've got some good gags for it. Good how the gag. Racetrack had a beautiful infield, and after the third race, you had it for lunch. Oh, another guy picks your pocket and takes your wallet and the list of the races you were betting on. Then the guy takes one look at the list, and he hands back your wallet with an extra dime for car fare.
Very funny.
Don't like it?
Didn't Bob Hope do something like that?
Well, so what? We'll twist him.
Now, what twist have you got?
Well, instead of eating the infield after the third race, you eat it after the fifth.
Oh, fine.
I don't like the jokes anyway for Eddie's program, Jack. Even your wife wouldn't laugh at them.
What do you mean, wife? I'm married to my jokes.
It'll never be a successful marriage.
Why not?
Your wife's older than you are.
Oh. Hey, that's not bad. That's not bad. We can use that in the script.
Hey, boys, we're forgetting something.
What is it, Joe?
That's going to be the Washington's birthday program. We've got to have the first routine on George Washington.
Oh.
How you never tell a lie and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's right, Joe. Now, for our second routine, we'd better carry on the feud between Phil and me about the money I say I lent him.
Mm-hmm.
He still refuses to pay me back.
Yeah, we could carry that on for two spots.
Well, how about the last spot, fellas? We need a good sketch.
It's getting around income tax day.
And that's a goodie, an income sketch.
Yeah, if you can say it.
Yeah. Well, listen, suppose you fellas start thinking about that. I think we ought to...
There may be several other fellas, or perhaps enough of them to give us adequate national defense, working on the show, but their function is generally to submit jokes on subjects that the main writers and the comedians have selected. Two or three days later, the main writers and the comedian get together again. Everything's been written except the sketch.
Here it is, Eddie. Here it is. Look, Joe and I have been talking this thing over, and we got a sketch that works out like this. Listen now. You come into the income tax office.
Yeah.
You've been looking through your income tax, and you find out that you didn't pay the government enough for 1938. You owe them $5.42. Well, now, being an honest guy, you want to pay the income tax department this back tax, which they ain't discovered that you haven't paid.
The income tax collector doesn't believe you.
Yeah, naturally. Well, that's good. Go on.
He says that probably the real reason you want to pay your back tax is that you're a crook, and that it's your way to ease your conscience.
Oh, say, I like that. There's always comedy and menace.
Well, it gets you sympathy.
Yeah.
That's what makes Jack Benny.
He thinks you're a criminal, so he calls the police station. In the next scene, you're in the police station being third degreed. The police are trying to find out what crime you committed.
And you keep saying that all you want to do is pay your $5.42 back income tax. We throw in a lot of gags back and forth.
Then the cops decide you're nuts. It isn't a case for them. It's a case for the psychopathic ward.
So in the next scene, you're in the psychopathic ward. You've been there a month.
A psychoanalyst comes in, and he starts to psychoanalyze you.
And after you psychoanalyze, the guy from the income tax department comes back, and he says that they studied your case, and they decided to let you go.
Yeah, but that's no punch finish.
Yeah, but that ain't the finish.
Oh,
listen.
Go ahead.
You go back to the income tax department, and the income tax collector isn't there, see?
He's out.
He's on a vacation.
Yeah.
There's a new man taking his place. You tell him that you're there to pay $5.42 back income tax. He starts giving you the same business as the first guy. He's just about to accuse you of being a criminal.
When you say, I'll save you the trouble, you grab the phone yourself and say, hello, give me police headquarters.
Hey, that sounds like the nuts. And I just thought of a great gag for the Psycho LaLancia scene.
Yeah, if you can say it.
Yeah, well, anyway, the doctor says...
Well, after the writers whip the sketch together, the comedian usually goes over it himself and makes changes and, working with his writers, gags it up or cuts it. And now some, although not all comics, have previews of radio programs. That is, about a week before the broadcast, they try out their script in a live studio audience, invited especially for that purpose. After the tryout, the main writers and the comedian get together at the comedian's home once more.
Say, did you fellas mark down the gags that laid eggs? I laid so many, I feel like front man for a hen.
Oh, no, it wasn't bad. It wasn't bad. If those weakies go out, it'll tighten the script. Then we'll get better laughs on the other gags.
And so the script is cut and strengthened. Meanwhile, the boys have started work on the following week's script. Then comes the broadcast, when the script, which the writers and the comedian have written, will stand or fall. And that, ladies and gentlemen, shows you how easily the spontaneous script you hear on the air is often ad-libbed. The sound effect of the week. From time to time, Behind the Mic presents some sound effect which was used on a program of the past week and tells exactly how it was done. On the program Manhattan at Midnight, the sound effect of a toboggan sled going down a slide was used. It sounded like this. This effect was made, believe it or not, by taking an ordinary pie plate with a hole in the center and spreading it with cornstarch and salt. And then it was placed on a phonograph turntable, and using a needle with a flat end, the pie plate was actually played on the phonograph like a record, a toboggan sled going down a slide. Ladies and gentlemen, this afternoon we're going to take you behind the scenes to show you what happens when NBC decides to build an act and attempt to promote it towards radio success. As a current example, we're going to use a trio called the Singing Powers Models. I want to introduce you to the man who had the idea of forming this group and who is generally responsible for building them up, an executive of NBC's Program and Talent Department, Mr. Ruby Cowan. Hiya, Ruby.
Graham, how are you?
Ruby, exactly who are these girls that NBC decided to try to promote towards radio success?
Well, Graham, they're three gorgeous Powers models.
I can see that.
Girls who pose for advertisements in the big magazines.
And they are Lulu's.
You're not kidding. You're not kidding. If they were only flowers and I were a bee. Oh, boy.
Well, I tell you, the name of John Powers' model has great advertising value. Mm. So we figured that if we could get three of his girls who could sing, and sing well, then they had a chance of clicking. After conferring with Mr. Powers and auditioning 30 of his models, we selected the trio. By we, I mean myself and Bob Kerr, who was to be their personal representative when we sent them out into the theaters.
Couldn't you have rung me in there somewhere, Ruby?
It's too late now, Graham.
Too bad.
The next step was to get a vocal coach, and we decided to select a girl who herself had sung in a trio, Miss Joan Brooks. Joan had been one of the Three Little Words in Phil Spitalny's group, and she'd also been responsible for much of the success of the Four Bells. We hired a crackerjack songwriter, Jay Levison, to write and arrange special material for the trio. He and Joan Brooks got together, and she told him what type of music the girls should have.
Look, Jay, these kids have never worked together as a trio before, and I don't think we ought to give them anything too difficult to start off with.
All right, Joan, what do you want?
Well, they have fresh, sweet voices.
Mm-hmm.
I think they should have fresh, sweet tunes and novelty numbers.
Yeah.
I'd make trio arrangements of melodies like Song of the Islands, and you write whatever novelty numbers you want to.
Okay, I'll get to work right away.
After the numbers are written, Jay and Joan rehearse the girls at Joan's apartment.
Oh, wait a minute, girls. Just a minute. Listen, Carolyn, you're singing a little too loudly.
Oh, I'm sorry, Joan.
Here's a good thing to remember. Next time any one of you girls can't hear the other two girls, then you're singing too loudly. Now let's take it again.
Hawaiian Oil.
Now we figure that we're having the trio work together before an audience would be the best way of seasoning them so they could eventually be presented to a radio sponsor, as well as having them pick up some money.
Oh, now, Ruby, you're just getting commercial.
Well, anyway, Graham, we booked them in out-of-town theaters. In order to get the publicity for them, their personal representative, Bob Kerr, goes into those towns a week before their appearance so that he might make an appointment to see the head of the fashion shops and department stores.
Now, look here. How about having a little fashion show at your store sometime next week when the girls will be in town and use them as models? You can advertise the fashion show and mention that the girls are appearing at the theater. You'll get them as models, and we'll get a plug for their personal appearance.
Well, I think that's a great idea. I'll be glad to, Mr. Carr.
Due to their ability to sing, their beauty, and the publicity they get, they break records in several of the cities in which they appear. And when an act does that, it stands to reason it will be good for a radio sponsor. And that's what we're building them up for, sponsorship.
Well, where'll they be next week, Ruby?
Well, next week they start Friday at the State Theater in Hartford, Connecticut, with Cleveland and Dayton to follow.
Uh-huh. Well, how about getting some radio publicity for them?
Well, we've got them on this program behind the mic, haven't we? And I think that's a good start.
Yes, that's true, Ruby. Well, girls, suppose you show our listeners the type of singing that we hope you'll be doing regularly on the air someday for some nice, big, juicy commercial sponsor.
Merry-go-run as the music plays. She gaily shouts as she goes round the bound on her holiday. Cymbals ring and zing as she takes a swing and grabs at the ring. Calliopes play the day away. Each hour is one sweet song. And merry, merry goes round the merry-go-run as the ponies glide. Merry, merry, they ride and ride. What a treat to feel the beat of a thumping drum. Boom, ta-rum, as Mary goes up and down and round and round and round on her merry-go-round.
Oh, I love to hear the calliopes play.
Boom, 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 boom.
But I'd rather swing every night and day. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do. But this is a waltz. You can swing a waltz. You'll just have to bloop, bloop, and do as we say. A one, a two, a three. Heck.
merry-go-round on her merry-go-round as the music plays. She gaily shouts as she goes round the bar on her holiday.
Cymbals ring and zing as she takes the swing and grabs at the ring. Calliope's play the day away. Each hour is one sweet song. And Mary, Mary goes round on her merry-go-round while the ponies cry. Even the grown-ups don't want to be shown up. They ride and ride. What a treat to feel the beat of a thumping drum. Boom-ta-rum as Mary goes up and down, and round, and round, and round on her merry-go-round.
Thank you, girls, thank you. And boy, oh boy, if you people only knew what you're missing because you ain't got no television sets. It practically got me in tears. Oddities in Radio, presenting odd little true behind-the-mic stories that help make radio sometimes amusing, sometimes exasperating, but always interesting to the people in it. This week's oddity, and here's one of radio's veteran band leaders and one of the grandest guys in the business, B.A. Rolfe, to tell you an experience of his when he had the Lucky Strike program back in 1928. B.A. Rolfe, a shadow of his former self. B.A., that was some band you had back in those days.
Yes, Graham, we had the loudest band that ever hit the airwaves.
Yep.
It was a perfect musical shooting gallery.
Well, what was the story, B.A.?
Well, Graham, one day we were rehearsing in a studio. It was up at 711 Fifth Avenue before the NBC moved to its present palatial quarters. And Dr. Walter Damrosch was NBC's very highly respected and somewhat feared musical director. He had heard about our band, and one day he paid a visit to the studio. He sat in the control room and listened while we blasted away rehearsing. All right, boys, take 5 minutes.
Okay.
Good morning, Mr. Rolfe.
Oh, hello, Dr. Damrosch. How do you like the band?
Mr. Rolfe, let me ask you one question. Do you broadcast on a network?
Yes, Dr. Damrosch. We are heard coast to coast through 46 stations.
What a waste of money. Why don't you just open the window?
Thank you, V.A. Rolfe. Thank you very much. Behind the Mic salutes a program you loved. We in radio believe that radio has a tradition of which it can well be proud, a tradition of good programs that linger fondly in our memory. And so each week we bring you a star or a part of a program you used to hear, a program you loved. This afternoon, we salute Whittall's Anglo-Persians, which was on the air from 1926 to 1930, and which featured the music of Louis Katzman and his orchestra. Whittall's Anglo-Persians.
I am the voice of the crystal ball of fate. I lift mine eyes unto the crystal ball, and lo, I see a city of ancient Hadaday. And mine eyes are amazed to view flying over the city, even as I have read of it in the Arabian Nights, a magic carpet on which is sitting a turbaned prince. The magic carpet fades into the hazy.
Thank you.
look into the crystal ball of fate once more, and lo, the magic carpet has returned from its journey to distant lands. It descends to the palace roof of its princely rider. The crystal ball clouds and then darkens. I see all.
Thank you, Louis Katzman, for helping us recreate a small part of that happy program. It takes me back 16 years. Tom Powers, no relation to John Powers, the model impresario, is undoubtedly one of the most proficient actors of the stage and radio. He's also one of the most delightful raconteurs to whom I've ever had the pleasure of listening. Tom's present program is called That's Not New York, in which he tells true stories about America's largest city. Presenting Tom Powers.
Well, Graham, this story is about a former program of mine called Life Studies, in which I used to tell unusual stories about real people. I offered a certain amount of money for every true story I could use on the air. One day, a man came into my office and told me he was an international jewel thief who had just gotten out of prison after serving a long stretch. His cellmate, Bill, a much younger man, when he was only 18 years old, had killed a policeman. As the jewel thief told it to me, during the boy's trial, things were going pretty much against him, and it looked as if he might wind up in the chair. Then the boy's mother was called as a witness, and as she walked by him toward the stand...
Willie. Oh, Willie.
Listen, Ma. I don't want you to say nothing. Just keep your mouth shut and I'll beat this rap. Don't you say nothing. If you do, I'll never talk to you again.
This way, please. You do solemnly swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Willie, he's a good boy at heart. He just got in with a lot of bad companions. I think it's my fault, too, Your Honor. I've had to make a living for us both. I just couldn't give him the time a growing boy should have. If I could have been with him more, I could have shown him what was right. Oh, please, Your Honor, please, you give him a chance, eh? I'm sure that if he...
And therefore, I sentence you to spend the rest of your natural life in the state penitentiary.
Goodbye, Willie. I'll come to see you as soon as they let me.
Don't you ever come near me. You and your preaching, 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 that's all you ever done. I don't ever want to see you again.
All right, Bill. Come along.
Okay.
The jewel thief told me that Bill became his cellmate. He was a sullen, difficult prisoner, and he spent a lot of his time in solitary. Bill was an ignorant boy who could hardly read or write. He'd never known what went on in the world outside his own immediate problems. One day, after he'd been in prison for about a year...
Telegram for you, Bill. Here.
Telegram?
Want me to read it to you, Bill?
Yeah. Yeah, go ahead, Slick.
It's, bad news, Bill. Your mother died this morning.
Yeah? Well, that's too bad. Gee, so Ma died.
The jewel thief told me that he'd become very much interested in Bill. The boy became stricken with remorse and began to feel that his crime had been responsible for his mother's death, and quite rightly so. In the meantime, his cellmate, the jewel thief, for lack of something better to do, because he found Bill basically intelligent, began to teach him to read and write. They used books they got from the social service agencies.
The Swiss family Robinson... Already the tempest had
continued.
continued 6 days. And on the seventh, it's Fury.
Well, you're certainly doing better now than you did 6 months ago. Go on.
Okay. And Tiny Tim said, God bless us, everyone. Say, this ain't... isn't a bad story, is it? Peace ho. Let us hear him. Friends, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears.
Can you imagine? 2 years ago, you could hardly read. Go on.
I come to bury Caesar, not to praise him. The evil that men do lives after them. The good is often perished.
The jewel thief told me that when he was ready to leave prison, he found that Bill's viewpoint on life had undergone a considerable change. He was no longer quite as much of a troublemaker as he had been. I thought this was a splendid story. The story of how a thief had helped with the regeneration of a murderer. I told the story on my program, Life Studies. Shortly afterwards, I got a beautifully written letter from the boy himself. He'd heard about my broadcast from one of the men on the prison farm who had listened to it. We began to write to each other. I asked him if he ever had any visitors, and he wrote me that since he'd been in prison, he hadn't had a single one. So that Christmas, I went to see him and took him some books. I write to Bill regularly and make it a point to see him every Christmas. I'm the only visitor he ever has. I'm not saying he's become an angel, Graham, since he's learned to read and write, but since he's learned another angle of life through books, he says he's convinced that he's through with crime. I do my best to keep him in contact with life by writing to him as often as I can, giving him the color of life through my eyes.
How old is he now, Tom?
About 32.
Well, is there any chance of him ever being paroled, Tom?
I don't know. But if he does get paroled, I think he'll be worthy of it.
It's a grand story. Thank you, Tom Power. Thank you. Next week's program will be most unusual. It'll be entirely devoted to a salute to the entertainment pioneers of radio. Those gay people who amused you in the days when nobody knew if radio was here to stay. You will hear the voice of the Silver Mask Tenor once more. The music of Godfrey Ludlow. And the voice of my old radio twin, Phillips Carlin. The piano of WEAF's first accompanist, Winifred T. Barr, and many others. This is Graham McNamee saying good afternoon, all.
Is written by Mort Lewis. Original music composed and conducted by Ernie Watson. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
Now that we have some information on how comedies were created on radio, we're going to actually listen to a few of them. We're going to start off with the unique sound of Bob and Ray, and when I say unique, this is early Bob and Ray. This is from a local Boston radio station in the 40s. Matinee with Bob and Ray.
Love I can't live without. I know you are beyond the shadow of a doubt.
This is Tex and all the Smoky Valley boys just playing at you folks, sitting out there in the audience. I can tell by the serious look on your faces that you're going to enjoy the music we got here for you. All you folks here in the auditorium, Dover Summersworth, New Hampshire. And then, first number, wait a minute, I think somebody's laughing at me, Ray, and I can't go on when things like this happen.
Okay, cut off the laughing.
Quiet out there. Yeah, don't laugh.
Well, knock off on that laughing. Just remember, you could have been Tex.
Well, I guess I won't play nothing anyway.
Just because you're lucky doesn't mean you could laugh, you know.
You're just jealous because I'm cleaning up.
That's right. When, though?
This is Matinee with Bob and Ray.
Oh, yes, of course it is, friends, yes.
Uh-huh. Yeah, music by Kevin
Page
Bill.
One of our script.
There goes page one in the first 2 minutes.
What happened to your wandering Buick, Bill?
Oh, well, he's got a happy look on his face today. Hey, I'd like to do another little number for you.
In other words, somebody liked your car as much as you did, Bill.
Yeah, more so.
Well, that's
great.
You
got a Benzel, Bill. I need a Benzel here. We have several commercials this afternoon, probably five or so.
We have one beginning with capital C.
Oh.
Hands on that, student.
Okay.
Bob.
I nearly said it, didn't I?
Yes.
Chesterfield over and over again. Chesterfield satisfy women and men. Milder, much milder, all smokers agree. Always by Chesterfield ABC.
ABC, ABC, la 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 la. ABC. Speaking of music, and who was? You were late getting into the studio today.
You know that 1 minute warning we give you?
I was outside in the windows. Would you like to be let go?
Would you?
Would you like, for instance, me to grab your left leg during You Were Only Fooling?
Like he did last week?
Would
and
you
with
like
such dire results?
Would you like that?
No, Your Honor.
All right, Mr. Wilson.
All right, that'll be $5. And you're lucky to have gotten off as easily as you did.
So, scot-free.
And here he is.
Good afternoon, friends.
Scott, where you been?
Well, I've been around town, Bob. I'm here in connection with the Mary Magoon swim to Boston Light. I'm handling it for the Press Association.
I was hoping we'd hear something about that.
Plus wire photos and feature stories and rotograph you.
You're running a cocktail party?
Get a couple of spreads and some magazines, I presume, too. That's what I figure.
Yeah, well, I hope you
do. Any questions you want to ask me?
Yes. You haven't going to have a party in celebration of this event?
After she completes the swim, we'll have the big party.
Well, what if she doesn't complete it?
Over at the Parkman Badstand, the Common, there'll be everything you can eat.
And this is Friday, is it?
Yeah.
Uh-huh, and Mary's going to swim out to Boston Light.
Excuse me, Bob, this is Wednesday. She's going to swim on this coming Friday.
That's what I just said, yes.
You didn't say that, no. And I just want to keep it straight. There may be some men listening who can give me a little publicity on this stunt.
Let's leave it to maybe somebody listening.
The pitch here is this. We're trying to get Magoon at the movies. We think we got something there.
And also, will she endorse breakfast products and various things like
that? Yeah, cereals, you mean, and like that? Sure, uh-huh. Absolutely. Yeah.
What does she favor currently?
Soap, right now.
Uh-huh.
She's trying to get herself connected with some soap company, you know, and say, I use it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Did you bring her along with you today so that we could
She isn't here right now, no.
First-hand impressions. You think she'll be here before
the
half hour?
Oh, she said she would.
You think she will arrive then and make an appearance before we leave the air this afternoon?
Yeah, I told her.
Think she will put in an appearance here and favor us with a few words about her current campaign to swim out to Boston Light. Is that what you mean? Is that what you're trying to say?
Yes, you took the word
from
her.
All right, then. If you'll just go over there and sit down. We'll be with you in just a moment.
Okay, well, thanks again.
Okay, then.
And keep pitching behind Magoon, everybody.
We'll do that.
Wow.
And here's the Mary Margaret Magoon Band, which will be featured at T Wharf on Friday. Is that where she's teeing off from?
I don't know where she's leaving, Bob. I think she's leaving from the
we'll have to ask
Charles
her
River Basin
when she comes in. Go ahead, Bill and Ken.
So then what happened, Bob?
Well, nothing. I mean, it just started to talk.
That was You Were Only Fooling, played by Ken and Bill and the orchestra.
And a wonderful job they did of it, too.
I don't think so.
Ken Wilson, I might mention, has invested some money in the Ken Wilson warehouse.
Has he?
Yeah.
And that burn-proof warehouse?
And that's right. And he's going to sell everything from the warehouse.
Oh, say, factory to you price.
That's right. Everything will be scot-free.
No, not now, Scott. Just an expression. We'll have you back later.
Oh.
To hear more about me.
Well, anyway, Ken Wilson figured that everyone is buying at warehouses these days.
That's right. The only place they can buy and save money.
So Ken thought he'd buy himself a warehouse and fill it with things and sell them.
Mm-hmm.
And he's going to have a list of the products he is retailing up on the program someday soon.
Oh, good.
10-year-old television
set. Yeah, television. Yeah. 10-year-old television set.
That's good. We are going to be out in Waverly on Monday. I think we should mention again today, don't you?
Yeah.
That VFW thing.
As a matter of fact.
Band concert.
Yeah. And we're going to be out on the lawn, I understand.
Yeah, going to be outdoors under these stars.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Out at, where is it, Waverly?
Waverly, yes. I believe that's part of Belmont or something.
I think it is.
It's a publishing company, yes. But I see no reason why we should give them a plug.
No, absolutely not.
Then Friday night.
They haven't had a good seller since Black Beauty.
Friday night, it's Bob and Ray free dinner night at the casino at Magnolia.
Of course, they have a crossword puzzle book out now that's going like wildfire.
Not a free dinner for everyone, of course. It's a free dinner for
cookbook,
Bob and Ray.
A cookbook there you might like to look at.
And we get in scot-free.
Yes.
No.
Don't angle on this.
Wait a second. That was just an expression, Scott.
Oh.
I know you happen to have the same name.
Okay, Bob.
Expression, but just sit over there if you will.
I'm sitting tight.
Yes.
Haven't been to bed all night.
Do something about that.
Surely.
But Friday at Magnolia, of course, is just like any other evening for anyone who wants a grand evening out.
There's a card this morning, Bob, from somebody. It was postmarked Mongolia.
Yes, they heard the Chinese John Agony yesterday.
And they said they've been looking all over, and they can't find the casino at Mongolia.
Oh, it isn't Mongolia.
No,
friend.
No, it's not clear across the universe.
No.
It's up in Magnolia. Let's make that clear.
And that's
Magnolia.
That's up near Gloucester. It views the harbor, I think.
That's right. And it's definitely not Mongolia.
At least the casino does.
Yes.
View Mongolia. Magnolia.
Magnolia. Please, Bob, let's not confuse them. We're going to be up there Friday night for fun and frolic. And boy, what a time we'll have.
Yes, and we'll dance to the gay lilting music. You know, I saw a big advertisement for the casino.
You did?
It said, return engagement. By popular demand. I thought Sammy Eisen and his orchestra was up there.
Hey,
but it must be
not.
Popular demand in his band.
Yeah. Well,
because he's back.
Anyway, when you see that, return by popular, or...
Return engagement by popular demand. He plays all... I don't know how he fills all those bookings, because you see him everywhere.
And a return engagement...
He must have units out.
That automatically throws out Sammy Eisen, because he never gets...
Never plays a second place.
Oh.
Plays a place the second time.
Good work for you, Bob.
I pull myself out of that one scot-free, I guess.
Yes!
No,
one other thing.
No, but I think we should have a sample of that music that's being featured at Casino.
All right.
And Sammy and the men are ready. They're here as they are every day, just waiting to play for you. Sam is a new piano player with prospects of great things ahead of him.
He's to accompany Donald Novus for a few years. Imagine $1.85.
They don't play by arrangements, I might say, too. It's a novel outfit.
They just kind of feel their way through. Yes, $1.85 for fun and fine
food.
Don't
have many lights up there, that's why.
Delightfully served. And you dance where cool ocean breezes play along with the best music in town. It's the
popular demand.
It's the casino at Magnolia. For dining, for dancing, for luncheon. The casino beside the sea at Magnolia is a summertime paradise. You know, it's a short and glorious drive along the North Shore, Route 127 from Salem to Magnolia.
About 80 miles from Newham.
No, it isn't, Bob.
How far is it?
It's a very short drive.
30, 35. And
Route 127
will make
from Salem
it?
To Magnolia with a view of... I'm not making too much noise.
No, I can hear you perfectly.
With a view of Gloucester Harbor when you arrive. All this and reasonable prices, too. There's never a cover at the casino, and the dinners start at $1.85. And here's a real wonderful way to spend a summer evening or a lazy summer Sunday. You can take the delightful scenic drive to the casino at Magnolia, stroll through the beautiful grounds overlooking the ocean.
Bring your horseshoes with you.
Have a cocktail at the bar, dinner or luncheon if you wish, and the dance floor is ocean cool. And, as we've said so many times before, there's no music. Now, for fun, or like Sammy Eisen's
music.
Music
by popular demand. Yeah. They're going to start playing.
For fun and food, for dancing and dining, go to the casino at Magnolia.
What a rare combination that is. Fun, food, dancing, and dining.
You'll feel good again.
Well, that takes care of that one for this afternoon. And right on the top of it, right after it, we go into something else, don't we?
Will you? Oh, that's well,
they could go,
go ahead,
by
Bob.
New Haven Railroad, I suppose. You they don't go up there, do they?
Up where?
To Magnolia.
Well, I suppose they could. The only thing is, I don't think they'd get the okay from the office.
They have tracks up there.
Yeah.
But more and more
be
these days,
May.
Regular travelers between Boston and New York
be that, friend,
prefer
that.
New Haven Railroad's speeded-up train schedule.
Are you funny like that, friend?
These experienced travelers realize that New Haven's 3-hour, 55-minute run from Back Bay to Grand Central Station
is
not only
that.
The fastest way for business or pleasure trips, but it offers a real saving over other forms of transportation.
Hey, weren't you?
You travel, yes, from in-town Boston to midtown New York faster than
excuse
any
me.
Other way.
Excuse me, Bob, who's going to pitch for the Sox?
I don't know. You avoid expensive side trips to and from your departure and arrival points. And remember, too, New Haven trains are dependable. They run safely and on time in any kind of weather.
Well.
New Haven travel to New York is no adventure. It's a pleasure. Next time you travel, go in cool, air-conditioned comfort. Go New Haven.
You know, it's a funny thing. I went over to the South Station the other day, and I took a train down to New York, came back. Then I took a train down to New York, and I came right back. And I took a train down to Philadelphia, and I came back.
Yeah?
Is there any way you can buy a ticket that's not two ways?
Not a round trip?
Yeah. I mean, can you go to Philadelphia and stay there if you
sure
want?
Sure you can.
Well, I was
sure
wondering.
You can.
Because, you know, I wanted to stay in New York that first time, but I had to hurry right back. You know?
Well, next time, just get a one-way ticket.
Oh, I didn't know.
It'll only cost you half as much, too.
See, I'm kind of self-conscious. I hate to go up to the information booth and ask questions.
Well, now you know.
That's why I keep coming and going.
Sure.
You know.
Sure.
Silly. But I am self-conscious about going to ask some questions.
When do they let you off scot-free?
Wait a minute.
Well, I suppose you better come over here if you're going to say anything more, Scott.
Well, I want to talk a little more about the Magoon thing and the swim to the Boston Light this coming Friday.
Yes. Uh-huh. What time does she leave? Have you checked on the
tide? High tide.
Have you checked the tide yet?
Yeah. She's going to leave at 2 a.m., Bob. High tide.
2 a.m.
And we expect her to...
2 a.m. She'll get up here before we leave the air, huh?
Well, I think it'd be best for you fellas to do a remote.
Why don't you rush
get
up here all wet?
Well, that could be arranged, but I think it would be better for you fellas to be right there as she comes out of the water.
Well, I think you might have something. I'll speak with technical on that.
All right.
And check through program and traffic.
Sure.
And production. And music,
yes. Have to get music clearance. That's right.
Yeah, because there might be a band in the background.
Or somebody whistling.
Yeah.
You always have to
clear the numbers that anybody might whistle.
Mm-hmm.
And then we will have an on-the-spot description. And I think that would be very interesting.
All right,
I wish Mary would show up.
I'm just going to test our two musicians. You read this commercial. I'm going to ask them a few questions about it.
All right.
I mean, I don't think they were listening.
I don't think they were.
First, you, Bill. Would you care to answer this question from me? I can't make a question out of that, Bob. I mean, that's pretty clear, isn't it?
Yeah, it made sense when I read it, I thought.
Regular travelers between Boston and New York prefer railroad? Bill Green.
Bill Green, have your hand up.
That's right, that's right. All right, now you can. These experienced travelers realize that this particular railroad's 3-hour and 55-minute run from Back Bay to Grand Central Station is not only the fastest way for business or pleasure trips, but it offers a real saving other than forms of transportation. Can you finish that sentence for me,
is that
please?
True or false?
I mean...
I don't know.
Oh, I mean,
yeah,
there's nothing wrong with Wilson today.
No, his mind is a million miles away.
Something wrong. Somebody must have played. All I can think of is somebody played. I can't say it, Bob.
Played a dirty trick on him somewhere.
Somebody played a record that he didn't want to go on the air.
You think that's what it was?
I think so.
I don't know what it could be.
It's a shame, because he's certainly down in spirit.
Yeah.
And he's down in mouth
uh-huh.
today.
Yeah.
What's the matter with you anyway, Ken?
It's awful bad today.
Even the blue shirt looks white compared to him. Well, that's the way it goes. Some days you're up and happy.
Last night. I was putting some new fittings into his front hall.
New what?
Fittings.
What are those, Bob?
Well, he's piping the whole place, you know.
Oh, are you, Ken? I didn't know that.
Gas chambers. Sure. He wants to have enough gas chambers for all the company that he expects.
Well, your line's not very good either, Ken. I don't know what's wrong.
No. You've got last week's script there. That's why. He's trying to find his place, and naturally you can't.
Anyway, the answer to all our questions should have been New Haven Railroad.
If you had that on your paper, give yourself 100.
And mark yourself as having a swell personality, and girls like you if you're boys. And, of course, boys like you if you're a girl. And that's the way it goes.
Yes, it is life. And I think we should have some more music right here, don't you?
I'll be glad to. This little song, Bob, is a thing I picked up one night at a bistro in France.
Is that so?
I was sitting there, and I was having an aperitif after a bologna sandwich.
Yes.
And this charming girl, she was French, you know.
Is this the Rue de la Paix?
I didn't get her name. She didn't stay long enough.
No,
but
I mean...
She came up to my table, and she looked into my eyes, and she said these following words.
She said those very words?
She whispered them in my ear.
Oh, I see.
I knew right away that this would mean trouble.
Then along Rudy LePay and his orchestra. Ah, Mimi, I remember those days in Paris so many years ago on the left bank. And then I went to the right bank. And then the First National.
They got an office there, too.
And then it was voting on the 10th. The 10th in the springtime. I beg your pardon. I believe you're in the wrong country, old boy. The 10th is in England, you know. Hey, Jove, I believe we stumbled on something.
Here, help me. Here, I'll help you get it on.
Go ahead and play your number. This can't be all introduction.
That's awfully cute. I like that. What was the name of that you were playing? That's what I thought it was.
Special announcement after this commercial, and get your best fanfare ready, Kenneth.
Here now is our announcer for Cynthia Sweet's Candy, Larry Lovebreath.
We've really got news.
Just a minute, Larry. Will you face into the microphone, please?
Excuse me. We've really got news for all of our Cynthia Sweet's fans. For Cynthia Sweet's has perfected a new product which we know all of you will enjoy as much as we do.
It's a glider.
It's the Cynthia Sweet's Coconut Cream Bar. A delicious, pure coconut cream bar. Will you cut the mic a minute? I want to speak to Ray. Now, to pick up where I left off,
It's the Cynthia Sweets Coconut Cream Bar, a delicious pure coconut cream bar. Cynthia Sweets' own blend and formula, which makes it the best tasting.
Hey, cut the mic. I want to answer him.
Five-cent candy bar you've ever tasted. If you've tasted the rest, now taste the best. Yes, the Cynthia Sweets Coconut Cream Bar is a quality serving of candy backed by the fine name of Cynthia. Famous in candy for over 50 years, and I'm serious, friends. You can get this new 5-cent Cynthia Sweets Coconut Cream Bar at drugstores and candy counters everywhere. Yes, I can see you realize this point. Ask for it. If your dealer has not stocked it as yet, we say, demand it. For friends, if you've tasted the rest, now taste the best. Buy several bars at your favorite candy counter today and treat the whole family. See what I mean? The new 5-cent Cynthia Sweet Coconut Cream Bar is a treat you just can't beat. And now our orchestra with a fanfare. Announcing the new Cynthia Sweet's Big Prize Contest. I beg your pardon, there are no prizes in this.
No.
Let's start it over again. Announcing the Cynthia Sweets Big Contest.
All right, wait a minute, wait.
Here it is, friends. And we may send you some candy if you send us a good answer. Now, all you have to do is this. Answer this question simply. Here it is. Don't count your chickens before they're hatched. Because.
In 25 words or less, send your entry to Chicken, WHDH, Box 10, WHDH, in Bolton.
Now, I'll repeat that just once more.
You'll
get out your
that
paper.
Question, please. Write this down now.
Don't count your chickens before they're hatched. Because. Now, finish that in 25 additional words or less or more.
And now, boys and girls, here's our Cynthia Sweets. Special code message for today. Word number one.
Under the C, five. Under the Y, B.
Under the M, 16.
Under the T, four.
Under the H, four.
Under the H.
Excuse me, something's
wrong
with our code.
There's only one H here. Under the H, five.
Under the I,
circle.
That's over the I.
Oh.
Under the I, seven.
And over the O, what's your name?
In 25 words or less.
That's the boys and girls code for today.
Now, for every message that we read, every answer that we read to the question, don't count your chickens before they're hatched because, in 25 words or less, we'll send, or more, a pound box of Cynthia Sweets candy boys, or candy.
That's right, Bob.
I don't think they're sending the coconut box.
No. Hey, I got a spot here.
All right.
Hey, listen. Here's a better, more effective way to help save your teeth.
I got another spot. Friends,
stop eating them rocks.
Three different distances.
Wait a minute. I'll have to read this, and then you read that, Bob. Hmm?
Can't we work them in together somehow?
Not very well.
All right. Okay.
Now, help save your teeth. Remember, you only have... How many sets of tooth?
You only have one tooth. Look out for it.
Remember... You may forget, but your tooth won't.
That's right.
Begin now guarding your gums and teeth both with iPana toothpaste to help save your teeth. Here's why. Dental experts now warn that over half of all tooth losses are due to gum troubles. And gum troubles can strike anyone. So, it's important to remember that iPana is the only leading toothpaste especially designed to stimulate gum circulation.
This was meant to be read by a man with teeth, right?
Promote healthier gums and cleaner teeth, both. In addition, iPana helps remove bacteria that invite tooth decay. Get iPana now and protect your gums and teeth both. In thousands of reports, 8 out of 10 dentists approve the iPana way. First,
excuse me, that's dentist.
I mean, there are two
plural.
Answers.
It's plural.
First, between regular visits to your dentist, brush all tooth surfaces with iPana at least twice a day. Second, massage the gums the way your dentist advises, with your thumb and forefinger and arms held akimbo. Don't risk halfway dental care. For healthier gums, for cleaner, brighter teeth, for a smile that wins prizes, get iPana toothpaste. iPana toothpaste. T-U-T-H-E.
Feature races over over three different distances, the sprint course, the endurance route, and the 5/16th mile. If you're waiting for the 1:30 news, it may be a little late today. Three different distances, the endurance route, 5/16th. We'll provide thrills for Greyhound race fans tonight at Wonderland Revere. Two races, the 8th and 9th, will be in the bright spotlight. And the rest will be in the dim spotlight. Here are the entries for the ninth. Never Risk, Nina Jennings, Katuza, Ruling Sultan, Air Brakes, Rush Away, Stylish King, and Bosun's Mate.
Ray Goulding, who believes he's King Arthur.
Post time, first race, 7:45. Daily double close is 7:30. And Revere is still near from Boston by MTA from Maverick Station, from everywhere, over wide highways. Two floodlighted free parking lots are provided for those who drive. Go Greyhound racing tonight at Wonderland Revere, home of Greyhound racing in New England.
Ken Wilson played the organ. Bill Green played the piano. Matt Day with Bob and Ray will be heard again tomorrow at 1 o'clock. We want to thank Ed Collins for his fine cooperation and giggles. Well, that's it, I guess, Bob.
Portions of this program were on film.
This is WHDH.
That was the Ivana announcement portion.
WHDH in Baghdad.
I mean, the film was on the teeth.
Matinee with Bob and Ray from the late 1940s on WHDH, and I understand that program was used to fill time before and after the baseball games. After a certain period of time, they came to the attention of the folks in New York, the radio people there, and they got onto a national hookup and eventually ended up on National Public Radio all the way up into the 90s. Now it's time for a different kind of comedy. We're going to listen to the Phil Harris and Alice Faye show from April 17th of 1949, and the teacher comes to dinner.
Good health to all from Rexall. Yes, it's Sunday, time for the Phil Harris Alice Faye Show, presented by the makers of Rexall drug products and 10,000 independent Rexall family druggists.
Good evening. We Rexall family druggists have some good news for you this evening. Next Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, we bring you our famous 1 cent sale. If you don't already know what that can mean to your family budget, here's how it works. During those 4 days, at every store with the orange and blue Rexall sign on the windows, you can get 2 quality guaranteed Rexall products for the price of 1, plus 1 cent. That's right, twice as much for only a penny more. And what's more, these savings apply to nearly 300 items, from antiseptics to toothpaste, cold cream to cough syrup, aspirin to shampoos. And remember, these are Rexall products, and that means they're as fine and dependable as science can make them. So drop in on your Rexall druggist next Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, or Saturday. Let him help you save with safety. Everyone knows you can depend on any drug product that bears the name Rexall.
Good health to all from Rexall. Your Rexall family druggist brings you the Phil Harris Alice Faye Show, written by Ray Singer and Dick Chevrolet, with Elliot Lewis, Walter Tetley, Janine Roos, Ann Whitfield, Walter Sharp and his music, yours truly, Bill Foreman, and starring Alice Faye and Phil Harris. The Harris family has just returned home from church. They attended afternoon Easter services, and Alice seems a little perturbed about the children's behavior.
I'm surprised at the way you children acted in church. Phyllis, you should know better than to whisper to your sister during the sermon.
I'm sorry, Mommy.
And as for you, you squirmed and fidgeted in your seat, and worst of all, why did you take your shoes off?
My little tootsies were killing me.
I was talking to Alice. Girls, go change your clothes for dinner. Willie, will you stay and have dinner with us?
Well, I'd like to, Alice, but I have a date.
Oh, I'm sorry you can't stay, Willie. You see, I've invited the Creightons for dinner, and I know you enjoy their company.
Oh, yes, the Creightons are very interesting. Don't you think so, Philip?
Oh, to be sure. Just think, we're having the Creightons for dinner. What a thrill, what a pleasure, what an honor. What's a Creighton?
Miss Mrs. Creighton is the children's school principal. I met her at church and invited her and her husband for dinner.
The school principal? Oh, goody. Oh, we're in for a racy evening.
Don't be sarcastic. Well, I told him to come over early, so I'd better get things ready.
Yeah, you go oil the magic lantern, and I'll dust off the stereopticon slides. Alice, with all the swell teachers they got at the school, why do you have to invite this Creighton character and her husband?
Well, Phil, that's no way to talk. They're very nice people.
Well, maybe so. But I ain't got nothing in common with Mr. Creighton. He went to Harvard, and I'm a Yale man. Why, we're natural-born enemies. Our schools have been rivals forever.
All right, Bula Bula. Philip, you went to Yale?
Well, naturally, Willie. He's a whiffin' poof. Haven't you ever heard his famous school song? Under the table down at Maury's, that's the place where Filsy dwelled. At the dear old Temple Bar he loved.
Thank you, Rudy Valley. Oh, you vagabond mother.
Well, if you'll excuse me, I better get the roast started.
Hey, Alice, you better make something else instead of roast.
Why?
It don't agree with Frankie.
Frankie's coming to dinner? Who invited him?
He did.
Now, look, Phil, I'm not going to have Frankie around while the Creightons are here. He's liable to insult them, and besides, his table manners are atrocious.
They are not. He's very polite. He always tips his hat when a lady comes to the table.
Well, it's important that this dinner go off smoothly, so you'll have to tell Frankie we can't have him. Tell him we haven't got enough food.
Fine thing. On account of a couple of old squares, I can't have my pal eat with us.
Excuse me, Philip. Before I leave, I'll go see if I can help Alice prepare dinner.
Oh, you'll be a great help, Prudence. What can you do?
I can whip the potatoes.
Well, I doubt it, Muscles, but give it a try. They fight back, call me, will you? Keep that left hand out. Keep your head down, bud. I can whip the potatoes. Comes on like Thor, don't he? Can't understand it. I've already invited Frankie to dinner. Now, how am I... Uh-oh, that must be him now. Now, how am I going to tell Remley he's not wanted?
Hiya, Curly. Happy Easter. What are we having for dinner?
I don't know about you, but I'm having roast beef. You see, Frankie, we can't... Well, that is... Well, we don't...
What are you trying to tell me?
Well, to put it blunt, Alice invited somebody else over to dinner. She doesn't have enough food for you, she doesn't want you, and you can't have dinner here.
Stop hinting and get to the point.
You're not going to eat with us.
Well, if you don't want me, I'll just take these expensive presents I bought for you good people and go home.
Well, go ahead, because you... Wait a minute. Presents?
Mm-hmm.
You mean those packages in your arms are for us?
Well, yeah. You were nice enough to invite me to dinner, so I bought something for you, Alice, and the kids. I got a box of my special-made cigars, an orchid, and a real live Easter bunny.
Oh, Frankie. You bought a real live bunny just for me?
Yeah, the bunny's for you. Now, if you'll call the kids in, I'll give them their cigars. The bunny ain't for you. It's for the kids.
Oh, well, I like the other present just as much. Go ahead, Frankie. Pin the orchid on me.
Curly, the cigars are for you. They're the special kind that I have made for myself. You trying to ignore them?
You said it. Them things taste like wet soup greens wrapped in a ripe banana skin.
You mean you don't like them?
I'd rather smoke the orchid.
or the bunny. I wouldn't touch one of them things if you'd
Daddy, may we color some Easter eggs? You said we could, and... Oh, hello, Uncle Frankie.
Happy Easter, kids. I got something for you. Wait till I take the cover off this box.
I wonder what it is, Phyllis.
There you are. How do you like it?
Gee, an Easter bunny. Oh, thank you.
A real live one, too. Isn't he cute, Alice?
Yeah, he looks just like Uncle Frankie.
He don't look like me. Does he, Phyllis?
Of course not. She's just saying that because you both have pink eyes. How did your eyes get so pink, Uncle Frankie?
From drinking carrot juice. Now, why don't you girls run along and play, huh?
Phil, who was that at the door? What's with the... Oh, Frankie.
Fine reception. She greets me like I was radioactive or something.
Hey, honey, Frankie brought Easter presents for all of us. He brought the kids a bunny, and he got something for you and something for me. Here's yours.
Oh, just what I wanted. I haven't had a good cigar in years.
You still ain't got a good cigar.
Look, Curly, will you stop trying to palm those cigars off on everybody? Here, Alice, this orchid is for you.
Oh, it's lovely. Frankie, it was awfully sweet of you to bring presents for all of us, and I'd like to reciprocate. Won't you have dinner with us?
Oh, gee, Alice. This is such an unexpected invitation. I don't know what to say, except couldn't I have lobster instead of roast beef?
Well, I'm sorry, but I've already put the roast in the oven. And another thing, Frankie, as long as you're staying, I'm going to have to ask you to be careful how you act. You see, we're having company for dinner.
Oh, good. We'll have a lot of fun. I love gay dinner parties. Scintillating conversations, sparkling dialogue. Who's coming?
Two characters from the Wax Museum. We're having Mr. and Mrs. Creighton. She's the school principal.
Give me back my presents. I'm getting out of here.
Now, wait.
Frankie, they're very nice people. They're a little formal and straight-laced, but it won't hurt you fellas to meet people like that.
Oh, yeah, it's going to be a great evening. I won't know what to talk to her about, and he's so henpecked he don't dare open his mouth unless she gives him permission.
Now, look, fellas, do me a favor and act nice when the Creightons get here. And above all, she's a school principal, so watch your grammar.
Philip, do you think that is he and she now?
Yes, that might be whom it are.
Are?
Yeah, when two people come, you use the plural.
Look, you two better not do any talking. Let the Creightons lead the conversation. Now be quiet while I let them in.
Leave them in.
How do you do, Mrs. Harris?
Hello, Mrs. Creighton. Mr. Creighton, it's a pleasure to have you. Won't you come in?
Thank you. Come along, Henry.
You know my husband?
Oh, hello.
And this is Mr. Remley.
Hi.
How do you do? And this is my husband. Henry, you may say hello.
Thank you, Cora. Hello, folks.
Oh, Remley, did you hear that kid ad-lib? Notice the way he slipped that folks in? Oh, he was stubbed.
Well, dinner won't be ready for about an hour. In the meantime, shall we all go in the living room? And, oh, Frankie, will you escort Mrs. Creighton?
Delighted. Madame, may I offer my arm?
Oh, how gallant. Mr. Remley, where did you learn to bow so gracefully?
Oh, one acquires a lot of poise from bending over pool tables.
Pool table?
Well, here we are. Shall we all be seated? Well, we're all seated.
Yeah. Sitting's down very nice. Sometimes I like it better than standing up. It's kind of a change.
Cribbage, anyone?
Wasn't it lucky that Easter fell on a Sunday this year?
Anybody care for a cigar? Anybody care for a drink? Boo! Oh.
That for?
I just want to make sure everybody was still alive.
Well, dinner should be ready soon, I hope. Isn't there something we can do to amuse ourselves in the meantime?
Anybody care to wrestle? How about you, Mrs. Harris?
Henry!
Well, I take judo lessons, and I got to practice with somebody, and I thought it might be fun with her.
Do you know judo, Creighton?
Oh, yes. You see, I'm rather short in stature.
I'll explain, Henry.
Yes, poodles.
When we were married, I insisted that Henry study judo so he could protect me against all those mashers who are always accosting beautiful women. He's been a judo expert for 20 years now.
And I've never had any occasion to use it.
Do you take judo too, Mrs. Creighton?
Mr. Harris, my time is completely absorbed by my educational duties.
Oh, I should think it would be, Mrs. Creighton. Your work is very important, and we parents appreciate the training you school teachers give our children.
We do our best. However, we must have cooperation from the parents. Sometimes the example set at home by certain fathers counteracts our efforts.
Yeah, it's a shame the way some kids don't get no help from their old man. I'm always learning my daughter's good grammar.
You are?
You said it. I ain't gonna have no kids of mine talking no lousy English.
Mr. Harris, I realize everybody hasn't had an education, but I think it the duty of every parent to acquire some knowledge. I'd suggest you read a few reference books.
Like what?
Well, have you ever read the Encyclopedia Britannica?
No, I'm waiting till they make the picture. That Lawrence Oliver ought to be great in that picture.
Mr. Harris, has it ever occurred to you why your children aren't learning the way they should?
Something wrong with the school system, huh?
There's nothing wrong with the school system. Mr. Remley, what do you think of our present scholastic curriculum? Mr. Remley? Frankie!
What? Whose deal is it?
Mr. Remley, I asked you a question.
Oh.
What do you think of the present scholastic curriculum?
That's all right, but it'll never replace the pari mutuel.
We were discussing education.
Oh, education. Wonderful thing. No school should be without it. It's great for the kids, too. Keeps them off the streets.
I do wish there was someone here who had an education that I could talk to. Mrs. Harris, of course you went to college.
Well, I...
Oh, college is so important, don't you think?
Well, I...
We never forget our college days, do we? I went to USC, class of 29. And you?
NTG, chorus of 34.
NTG? Mrs. Harris, you mean you were a chorus girl?
Oh, boy, I'd love to have seen you.
Henry! Just what
did you do in the chorus, Mrs. Harris?
Well, I danced a little and I sang a little.
You're darn right, and she was great, too. In fact, she still is. Go on, honey. Sing something and show 'em.
But, Phil, I don't think Mrs. Creighton wants to hear me.
Of course she does. Look at her sitting there. She's all ears.
Well, I'll pin them back so they don't flap while you're singing. Go ahead, Alice.
Lost my partner, what'll I do? Lost my partner, what'll I do? Lost my partner, what'll I do? Skip to my loo, my darling.
Lulu, skip to my loo. Lulu, skip to my loo. Lulu, skip to my loo. Skip to my loo, my darling.
I'll get another one prettier than you. I'll get another one prettier than you. Skip to my loo, my darling.
Lulu, skip to my loo. Lulu, skip to my loo. Lulu, skip to my loo. Skip to my loo, my darling.
Can't get a red bird, a blue bird'll do. Can't get a red bird, a blue bird'll do. Can't get a red bird, a blue bird'll do. Skip to my loo, my darling.
Lulu, skip to my loo. Lulu, skip to my loo. Lulu, skip to my loo. Skip to my loo, my darling.
Little red wagon painted blue.
Skip to my loo, my darling.
Fly in the sugar bowl, shoe, fly, shoe.
Skip to my loo, my darling.
Gone again, what'll I do?
Flies in the sugar bowl, shoe, fly, shoe.
Cows in the cornfields, two by two.
Flies in the buttermilk, shoe, fly, shoe. Wrong old boot and a run-down shoe. Lost my partner.
Oh, what'll I do?
Lost my partner.
What'll I do?
Lost my partner.
What'll I do?
Skip to my loo, my darling. Lulu, skip to my loo. Lulu, skip to my loo. Lulu, skip to my loo. Skip to my loo, my darling.
How'd you like that, Mrs. Creighton? That kid's got talent, ain't she?
Yes. Mrs. Harris, I don't wish to be rude, but do you think dinner will be ready soon?
Well, I'm afraid it won't be ready for another hour, so, you see, I'm having a roast, and by the way, I hope you like roast beef.
I don't mind it, but no seasoning, please. I can't stand seasoning of any sort. It makes me deathly ill.
Oh, it does, huh? Well, if you'll excuse me, I got to go in and see how the roast is doing.
No, Phil, you stay here. I'll go.
No, Alice, you enjoy yourself. I'm going in and see how the roast is doing. Excuse me,
please. No, wait a minute, Curly. I'll go with you. Excuse me.
Wait for me. Excuse me.
Henry, sit down.
Yes, dear. One of these days, I'm going to stand up on a chair and punch her right in the nose.
Henry, stop muttering.
We'll be right back. Come on, Remley.
Yeah, all right. Oh, brother, there ought to be a law against such women. Curly, if she's going to be here for dinner, I'm not staying.
Remley, I don't think she's going to stay for dinner.
What do you mean?
Well, you heard her say she can't stand seasoning in her food.
Hmm?
Now, if we were to go in the kitchen and kind of rub that roast down a little...
Oh, Curly, you're cute.
Yeah.
Let's go, Maestro.
Come on.
How is the roast doing, Chef?
It is beginning to acquire a little flavor.
Uh-huh.
Yes. All is needed was a subtle touch of seasoning. Just a touch.
Yes. What have you got in so far?
A pinch of salt, a dash of pepper, 2 cans of paprika, 3 bottles of Tabasco sauce, 4 strings of garlic, and a rubber glove. And now for the finishing touch, we glaze the roast with a delicate blend of vinegar, lemon juice, and turpentine.
Yum, yum. And just to make sure, we'll add a cup of this.
Claret?
No, Clorox.
Clorox?
Just enough to fade them a little.
Oh, well, look, Remley, we don't need it. It's hot enough now, at least I hope it is.
Well, there's only one way to find out. Taste it, Curly.
Taste it? I got a better idea. Let's take it to Bikini and test it. Hey, this roast is ready, Remley. Oh, this is a pretty thing. Yeah, you taste it.
It's your roast. You taste it. You better do it fast. It's starting to burn its way through the table.
Hey, wait a minute. I got it. They make tests on rabbits. Let's try this stuff on that bunny you brought the kids.
Curly, please. I ain't going to let you try it out on the kid's bunny. Might kill him.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. Hey, maybe if we could get a hold of another bunny.
Hi, Mr. Harris.
Well, if it ain't old Br'er Rabbit of Bruges.
Well, hop along Julius himself.
Yeah.
What are you guys doing?
Oh, nothing, kid. Nothing. We're just here in the kitchen, just getting ready to take a slice of Alice's delicious roast beef. Hey, do you want to see something good, kid? Oh, wait till I cut a slice off. There, ain't that a thing of beauty?
It looks delicious, doesn't it?
Yeah, it looks nice and juicy and tender.
I'm going to have a piece.
So am I.
I ain't.
What do you mean you ain't?
I hate roast beef.
But Julius, it's healthy for you. I always eat it. I got to look the way I do today from just eating roast beef.
That's a recommendation?
Oh, look, kid, you ought to try this. Miss Fay made it, and believe me, when it's seasoned this way, it doesn't taste like roast beef.
What does it taste like?
That's what we're trying to find out.
Well, if it don't taste like roast beef, I might try it. Cut me a piece.
Okay, but you can't have much. Just one big fat slice. Here you are.
Thanks.
Oh, Remley, I can't watch this. I gotta cover my eyes.
Yeah. We better hold our ears, too. Any second now.
Hey, you guys are right. This stuff is good.
He likes it. This kid must be keg-lined.
You sure you like it, Julius?
Yeah, it's got a taste that makes you...
Uh-oh. There he goes. There he goes, Remley.
Yeah.
Watch him whirl.
Help! There he goes. Help!
Hey, look at the way his scalp's trying to leave his head.
Yeah, he's
water, water, fighting up. Put me out, somebody.
Hey, Rumbly, I don't think we made it hot enough. There ain't no flames. Rolling now.
Now they're starting to glow a little. I better get the fire extinguisher and put them out.
No, it's chilly in the kitchen. Let him heat it up a little.
Gee, Marley, least we can do is bank him for the night.
Oh, he's spinning out.
What are you trying to do? Make a clinker out of me? I'm getting out of here.
What's going on in here?
Julius, what happened? I don't know what happened, but don't touch that roast beef. It's a booby trap.
What happened to the poor boy?
I don't know. He took one bite of Alice's roast beef and went out like a Roman candle. I'm afraid that meat is tainted, Alice.
Tainted?
Yeah. Now, shall we all sit down to dinner?
No, thank you. I just remembered a previous engagement. Goodbye, Mrs. Harris. Come along, Henry.
Oh, but Mrs. Creighton, please don't leave. I had no idea... Mrs. Creighton.
She is leaving. What a pity.
Oh, fellas, I don't know what you
Mrs.
did, but...
Mrs. Harris, I came back to talk to you.
Yes, Mr. Creighton.
Do you realize if my wife had eaten that tainted meat, something drastic might have happened to her? I might even have lost the dear girl.
I'm sorry, Mr. Creighton.
Well, never mind the excuses. There's just one thing I want to know.
What?
Where can I buy meat like that?
Alice and Phil will be back in just a moment. Right now, your Rexall family druggist has a drop-in visitor.
I've heard my neighbors talking about something called a one-cent sale you're going to have. What is it?
Why, it's a sale that Rexall druggist originated, ma'am, and it's become a regular tradition. Here's how it works. Next Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, we give you the opportunity to buy two of Rexall's famous guaranteed products for the price of one plus a penny.
In other words, a penny more buys twice as much.
That's the idea exactly. For instance, our 100-tablet bottle of Rexall Pure Test Aspirin ordinarily sells for 49 cents, but During the 1 cent sale, you can get 2 bottles for only 50 cents.
No wonder my neighbors are saying that's the time to stock up on drugstore needs.
Yes, indeed. And another reason it's such a good opportunity, ma'am, is because our 1 cent sale extends to almost 300 different items. They range from cough syrup to shaving cream, from vitamins to cosmetics. And when you buy all those necessaries at 2 for the price of 1, plus a penny, you're taking a big whack at your cost of living.
Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. I'm certainly going to remember those days next week.
And remember this too, ma'am, because it's the most important of all. These are Rexall products, and you can depend on any drug product that bears the name Rexall.
Good health to all from Rexall.
Folks, this is Phil again. Down in Galveston, Texas, this weekend, they're doing something of which the whole nation can be very proud. The Greater Galveston Beach Association is holding a 4-day welcome honoring General Jimmy Doolittle and his Tokyo Raiders. So congratulations to you, Jimmy, and to all your brave guys. We know you love that Texas hospitality, and have a wonderful time. And our thanks to Galveston for again showing our country's gratitude to you and your boys for a deed that will never be forgotten. Good night, everybody.
Good night. Good night.
Your pennies will save dollars next Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday at Rexall's famous 1 cent sale. Nearly 300 fine quality guaranteed Rexall products, 2 for the price of 1 plus 1 cent. Remember, next Wednesday through Saturday, Rexall's 1 cent sale, wherever you see the orange and blue Rexall sign on the window. This is Bill Foreman saying good luck to all.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
Well, I hope you enjoyed our program for this week. We'll be back next week with much more for you to listen to.